pretty thrilled to be here with you, Marie Jo, in your beautiful house slash workspace.
Yes, this portion right here is my studio. This is pretty much where I review plans, work every day. If you were here on a regular day, which I guess it is, but it would be, you know, you would have my laptop, a couple of iPads. We usually have some plans laid out that we're working on, paint chips, all that fun stuff. So this is where I work when I am not out in the field. And then through those doors is the rest of my personal house. So that's been pretty nice to have such a beautiful place to create every day.
So I've been lucky enough to get to know you over the past few weeks. And you're obviously, okay, you're a designer. For anyone who doesn't know, Marie Jo is the head designer, founder, all the stuff with JFY Designs, which is one of the most beautiful, I don't even know the correct words to say, but like you just designed the most gorgeous houses in Nashville. How would you describe your, if you had to say like a sentence about what you do, what would you say?
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
You are so sweet to say that. If I had to kind of say our company philosophy in short, I would probably say that what we strive to do is something that's very fresh, but also very timeless. But most of all, we really want to create houses that will reflect that particular client. I refuse to just do the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to repeat something because it turned out great.
Yes.
I constantly want to push the envelope.
And you let things be a one of a kind.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes clients will bring me something and say, oh, I loved what you did here. I want this for my house. And I just have to tell them, no, let's come up with something that's going to be equally as great, but that's just for you. I never want my clients to walk into another home and see something that they love in their own house and feel like, oh, I thought that was my house.
Right.
And now you see it everywhere else. So that is something that I think is a little unique to us because it's harder. It's harder to come up with something new all the time. Mm-hmm. It frustrates the builders that I work with. They're often
like, just do this, it worked.
Yes, exactly. Why, you know, but why make easy hard or whatever they say? But I think that's the key to our success is that people come to us knowing that it's not a formula. They're going to get something that feels like them and that is special.
So something that I found really amazing about you, because you're helping us, well, not helping us, you are designing our bedroom, which I feel so lucky to have you design our bedroom. It's like, so we can walk in and have this peaceful spot.
Yes.
That makes me feel just relaxed and comfortable. And so, but what I loved about you, when you walked into our house, you immediately, I could just see your brain going off like a computer. Like every single room in the house, because we were still moving in and everything's still kind of like, we're working and all that. Like your brain just immediately has a vision in whatever room you walk in. Like we walked into Michael's studio and like, it just like, you couldn't even help it. It was just flowing out of you all of the thoughts that you had for like, where to hang pictures, what kind of furniture to use, how to like place the furniture, what would look great, a different wall color. Like is that, I'm sure it's a blessing and a curse. When you walk into spaces, is your brain just like, overloaded with how you see it as it needs to be?
It pretty much is. And it's one of my, I'd say it's one of my strengths, but it is a little bit of a curse, like you said, because my schedule is always so busy. And very often I'll go meet a client thinking, oh, we'll start on this in a couple of months because, you know, I have to concentrate on these other jobs. And then the minute I enter and I see the space and I meet the people, I get inspired. I can see what I envision it to look like when it's done. And then I'll literally come home and be and can't stop thinking about it. And we'll start to put ideas and mood boards together almost instantly. So I have to force myself sometimes to think, okay, the ideas will still be there 2 months from now. Like I told them, slow down, finish these other projects.
Do you feel like sometimes if you don't catch the idea right then, it might leave you? Like you have to just like put it down on paper or put it in a mood board because if you don't grab it, like maybe it'll go away?
Yeah, no, absolutely. For a while, I actually had like before cell phones, I had a little mini recorder on my bedside table because I literally would dream about projects. And I would wake up in the middle of the night knowing that if I didn't, as you say, write it down, in the morning I may not remember. So I would literally record, please remember that you thought about this gorgeous green wall to do in, you know, whatever.
It was brilliant. Yes. You better, can't forget.
Yes. So I do that all the time. And my kids get so frustrated, not so much now that they're older because they get it. But whenever we travel or even just go out to dinner or mm-hmm. stay at a great boutique hotel.
Oh, you have all sorts of ideas.
I see things and I go up to them and I touch them to see what material they've used, especially in foreign countries.
Yes.
Or even like we'll get on the floor and see how they did this and take photos. And
like, Mom, get off the floor. We're in a 5-star hotel.
Pretty much that. Yes, exactly. No, that's exactly right. But it's what inspires me. That's how you get fresh ideas. I can show you something upstairs in my daughter's room that was an entire wall in this great little Soho restaurant that Chloe and I went to years ago. And the minute I saw that wall, I thought, I can do something so cool inspired by this.
Yes.
I'm never talking about taking it and copying it.
But we're all inspired by everything.
But being inspired, mm-hmm. yes, by something that speaks to you and then having it in the back of your mind. And when the right room, the right opportunity presents yourself, that's exactly back to what you were saying. I'll walk in a room and think, oh my gosh, this is the perfect setup and place and mood mm-hmm. to use this inspiration. And then you can build a whole room around it. And you can't even see the inspiration anymore, but it's really what started the whole thing, if that makes any sense.
So like you saw that room in Soho. Did you immediately know you wanted to use it for your daughter's room? Or do you sometimes just see things that inspire you and you like create a mood board or you write it down and just like tuck it away and you wait for that moment to show up or you're like, that's where I'm going to put that inspiration, like that inspired me.
You're absolutely correct. That's why I save all of those photos. I have mm-hmm. tons of banks of photos from travel. Sometimes even from scenery, like mm-hmm. certain colors. Mm-hmm. One time on a trip to Nevada kind of inspired a whole scheme of actually something a little bit like what you're wearing, those great earthy tones. Mm-hmm. And in that case, interestingly enough, we were redoing Chloe's room. And because it was a memory that we had together, this great little meal in this little Soho restaurant, I actually did build something for her room inspired by that one room. By that one wall in that restaurant.
Yeah.
And it was right for her at that time. But normally it is more tucked away for, and as a matter of fact, a lot of it, things in this house that we built about a year ago now is inspired by a lot of our travels and walls and floors that I touched and
yeah.
figured out how did they do that and how can that inspire, you know. It's just, it's fun to live in a space that, you know, very
anything's possible.
Exactly. And very often people will collect art in that or, you know, photos on their walls that create personal memories. But further than that, you can even have a home that the construction is even inspired by your own story, if that makes sense. So
I love that. So you have taken very many risks in your life. I very much admire you for a lot of reasons. One, you are so just, I looked on your resume too, the word you use is bold. And I like think that to describe yourself, that is so true. You're such a bold woman. You're not afraid to stand in your space, to be a mom, to be a wife, to be a designer. You moved from Canada to here. You didn't start off necessarily in design. You were like editor-in-chief of a magazine, and like you've had all these past lives that you have like gone full force into, and you've let yourself evolve unapologetically along the way, which I think is so inspiring, because I feel like especially for women, sometimes we feel afraid to take risk, or we feel like we're not worthy enough to like do all of these things, or it's a man's world and it's harder to be a woman, and you just like bust through those boundaries. How did you get that mentality? How did you get that bravery? Has it just been who you have always been your whole life, just to be like, this is what I feel passionate about, I'm gonna do this because I know I'm capable? Like, where did that mentality come from?
Honestly, I think where it came from is definitely from just the way my parents raised me. My mom was a very bold woman. She was very strong and brave and never backed out of anything. She worked always. And all the women in my life have always worked. And several of them are very creative. and have had to reinvent themselves due to the phases in life that are inherent to being a woman. So, you know, during the period of having young children, they may have to adapt a little bit, work part-time. But in Quebec, where I am originally from, women all work. It's mm-hmm. really important. It's, you know, they have their own identity. They have their own career. It is driven a little bit by the economy, but it's, you know, by the type of economy, but it's also a very cultural thing.
And there's no like shame in that. Because I feel like sometimes women in the United States are shamed. Like you get the mom guilt. If you work, you get mom guilt for not being home. But if you don't work, you get mom guilt for, you know, it's just like there's like all this guilt around it. But I don't feel like you grew up with that existing.
I did not. And I will say it really challenged me. So the way that we ended up in the US was very interesting. My husband at the time worked for a Canadian company called Nortel that had a really large presence in the US but was Canadian. So they had huge offices in Dallas, and this other Canadian guy that we knew from Toronto really loved him, you know, felt like he was a great up-and-coming guy, and offered him a job in Dallas. And our son Julian at the time was 6 months old. So the timing of that move, being that I was already staying home for maternity leave at that time, made it a little more appealing because mm-hmm. it allowed me to, without guilt, mm-hmm. stay home a little longer and enjoy him mm-hmm. as a true baby. Mm-hmm. So that had a lot to do with our, you know, choosing to move to the U.S. because he was sponsored by Nortel, had a work visa, but I didn't. That it meant that I did not have a work visa and I couldn't work while I was there.
Right. So it kind of just took the pressure off for a minute.
It sure did. And it was, at first, it was sort of a plan for 2 years.
Right.
Well, then it became 5 years. And after 2 years of staying home, well, basically, we kind of decided, you know what, let's have Chloe,
yep.
my daughter, a little sooner than we might have normally, just because I was home mm-hmm. already with a toddler, mm-hmm. not allowed to work, you right. know, officially. So, you know,
let's
it just
family.
it just made sense.
Right.
So I got pregnant with Chloe, had Chloe, enjoyed again the part of, you know, really her as a little baby and even the toddler. But I will say that the whole time there was a whole lot of adaptation because this is almost a whole other subject, but I will say that one thing that I've learned to admire in the US, and I learned that in those years in Dallas, is such a strong sense of community.
Yeah.
And so the women in our neighborhood had all these little play dates and ways to support themselves. They had this little ticket thing where you would get 5 tickets and you could exchange with a neighbor with kids about the same age. You would watch theirs while they went to get wow. their haircut. And then, you know, you would return the favor and
wow.
do the same for them. I mean, I've never heard of anything like this where I'm from.
Rallying together and saying, let me help you out. And so
yes.
you can take care of yourself and have a little, like a little me time, because it's so easy to lose yourself in kids.
Yes. So that was a lifesaver. The playgroups, such a great way to get together with other adults while my husband traveled. Mm-hmm. And, but for me, the challenge was, you know, trying to feel fulfilled with just the talk about our child's development and what they're mm-hmm. doing. You know, women in that stage of life tend to mainly talk about their kids.
Absolutely.
And
being in that phase of life, I can attest to that. I feel like I am talking to my friends all the time about, what are you feeding your kid? What's going on with your kid? Like, where are you going to send your kid to preschool? Like, all these, it's just so many questions that
yes.
you have. And it's just
yes.
baby, 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 baby. But sometimes you're like, can we talk about anything else?
Exactly. Like that part of, you know, I love to read and I used to work full time and mm-hmm. had a very challenging, exciting job with, you know, deadlines that created all this. Sometimes we work 24 hours nonstop to meet a deadline.
Whoa, so the adrenaline.
Yes, the adrenaline. Holy smoke. I miss that so badly. So I found a couple of friends who like to read where we would chat about books and other things then, but inevitably I feel like it always went back to the kids.
Right.
And that's a little bit so I basically decorated Julian and Chloe's nursery to death because anytime they were napping or they were at a little play date without me, I painted all of Julian's wall, hand painted them, which wow. I've never done that before. It took hours, but it just took my mind off of everything and allowed me to not be a mom.
And for, have that creative outlet just correct, for you.
For just a couple of hours a day or, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. a couple of hours a week even.
Right.
But those little moments just made me feel myself again.
Totally. I get that.
And then a friend asked me, oh my God, can you help me do my little girl's room? And then another friend would see that look. And that is literally how it got started, was just other friends seeing a talent that I had.
Yeah.
And asking me to help them. And it really just started with me helping them for free because I didn't have a work visa. And it was just, I was happy to do it. I just wanted to do something that made me feel at the end of the day, I've accomplished something else than changing diapers and going to the park.
Right.
I know how important that is.
Right.
I do not, and right. I will always cherish that I was privileged enough
yes.
to be able to take that time, you know, at home and have the means to do that. Mm-hmm. But once they started preschool and I had a little time on my hand, for me, staying home doing that time felt unproductive.
Right.
It was my window to be able to come up with, okay, what's my next challenge? And I'll tell you a little story. One time, I forget if it was Chloe or Julian, but was very colicky. And I just couldn't put him down. I'm fairly certain it was Chloe. And she was in the little baby Bjorn, mm-hmm. and I was bouncing her around and trying to... And that day, I think I called my husband at work 15 times, begging him to come home. And, you know, you need to come and take me a break. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm desperate. I'm crying too. Sitting on the floor with her, literally bawling.
The baby won't stop crying. And
Sylvain did come home at the end of the day, but he, you know, was also working, busting his butt at mm-hmm. work, and, you know, a lot of pressure on him.
Those are intense years. When you have little kids and you're working, it's intense.
They are. And he's super supportive. Best dad ever. Helped in the house. Cannot complain. So I'm in the best circumstances, but even then it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that day he basically sat me down and said, I love you, but like, who are you now? Like, I married this strong chief editor of a magazine,
chief editor, badass of a magazine.
Woman yeah. who worked, you know, who is so interesting and has an opinion on everything and is so, like fiercely independent, and now you're calling me, begging me to come home.
It's probably a wild shift, and I can totally relate to you because you just feel it's not that you're broken down in a bad way. You love these kids so much. You love that you're, like you said, privileged enough to be there, raise them, but you're also like, it's like a rebirth of yourself when you have kids, and like all of a sudden you were this woman who was doing these incredible things, and now you're with a baby who won't stop crying, and that's your existence, your identity. And it's a real big mind shock because men a lot of the times just keep going on.
Yes.
They keep going to work. Of course they love their kids. Of course they're great fathers, all that stuff. But they just like continue on.
Yes.
It always falls, for the most part, on the woman.
Yes.
And I feel like so many women have this identity, this moment of like, who am I after
yes.
kids? Like, how do I combine this full woman, the woman who was the powerful woman, intense, like in independent before kids, but still wants to be a great mom. Like, how do you combine it? So you were at that moment.
I was. And him telling me that, basically saying, like, this is not the person that... He wasn't telling me he wasn't loving me anymore,
right.
but he was saying, you know...
You need to take time to find out who
you are.
You need
to find who you are again, because... This is not you. This
yes.
is not the
yes.
Marijo that I know and love.
Yes.
And I get how hard it is, but we're going to have to find a way to make it work because I can't come, you know, I can't come home every time that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the, you know, it did make me think of, okay, I don't think that it can fulfill me completely to just be a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
And at that point, we were making the decision of, we're gonna actually stay in Dallas for, we don't even know how long. Like, he just, you know, chose to stay in that role. We're not going back to Quebec, where we're from. So I'm not going back to my magazine. Mm-hmm. You know, this is my life now. So that is pretty much when I decided to, you know, we applied for citizenship. It took years to get, but meanwhile, we got a green card. Mm-hmm. I got a work permit. I was able to start charging for the things that I was doing for free for friends. And I also found I found out that through going through that struggle, another one of my friend who actually felt the same exact way, but had never really said either. So she missed working and just was starting and was also very creative and not willing to get her hands dirty and do pretty much anything.
She was willing to get her hands dirty.
She,
yeah.
So we decided to work together. So wow. she came on board with me because with two people, you know, and I mean, at that point we were working maybe 4 hours in a day max. You know how it is. You drop them off at the little.
But don't give a driven woman 4 hours because she'll get a lot done.
That's exactly what happened. Next thing we know, we were working on the weekends sometimes when our husbands were home because we were so excited about our little project.
You probably felt reinvigorated and you started feeling like yourself again. And
yes.
But that's what I love about you, Marie Jo, is like here you are in a new country with two babies, not allowed to work. Literally, you're legally not allowed to work in the beginning. But then you started making adjustments. You took that leap of faith. You got you sat down with your husband. You took a hard look at yourself and said, "What fulfills me?" And then you move into a career that you're like brand new at. You have a skill for it, but you just start because you're like, "I can good at this. I love this. I'm just going to move forward in this career in a new country, like all new, fearless." That's amazing. That's amazing. So many people are scared to do that, especially women who feel stuck and feel like they don't know how to move forward. You just made the way. And I think that's encouraging for women to hear that you can just make the way.
Absolutely. I mean, if you find a niche, something you're good at, I keep reading these stories of women adapting during this pandemic.
Right. Oh my God. Women, like you said, have gotten the brunt of this in the pandemic with kids and homeschooling.
Yes.
And
yes. I read this article this week about this woman in New York who literally was making cookies for friends, just like as a little making them happy, brighten mm-hmm. them up their day because she's a good baker. And she now has decided to quit her job. She is making something crazy like 3,000 cookies a day. Everyone is fighting for her cookies. She has hired these delivery people who are hand delivering it through the city. And she is literally kind of starting what she now sees was always her passion and her dream.
Wow.
By accident, discover that baking, which was always something that made her happy, could be an actual career for her and something that turns into a business for her. And I really do believe that when you are passionate about something and willing to work at it, because it is hard work. And like you said, I think the key is adaptability.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't stay the same. I grew my business with my children.
Yes.
So at first I could only do so much, only take so much, but then they started actual elementary school and middle school and high school. And so I literally grew my business as the time allowed it more because I still was not willing though, you know, to miss out on being their mother. Like I was Chloe's first soccer coach when she was 3 years old with her little team. And I don't think I've ever missed one of their soccer games for work. They'll call me out on this if I did. I might have been on the phone a few times on the sideline. Not lying about that.
Okay.
If there's an emergency.
Right.
But I was there. I was present. Quality over quantity.
This makes me like teary. Because I just feel, I'm so emotional all the time. I feel like it's so hard for women. And I feel like we're in a shift in the world where women are truly, like, empowerment is happening. Women are being recognized for their skills. And it's like, women are being encouraged to, like, pursue their dreams and work hard. But it's also still really hard. We're in a shift where it's happening. It's not like you just wake up and it's, oh, I'm just going to be a badass and have this awesome job and then raise these kids and not have a struggle. Like, it's just a struggle. And for you to figure out how to make it work for you and to let it flow, you didn't rush the process. You let it evolve. And I feel like that's something that hearing you talk about is really amazing, that you just trusted the process and you let it be the process. You didn't try to rush it, it seems.
You can't force it too much. Correct. Not if you're trying to have it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I mean, I love what you just said, and it makes me happy too to see all the progress. It does make me sad that I feel like women are definitely getting set back by this pandemic more than anybody else, women of all color in all countries.
Mm-hmm.
We work so hard to get where we are, and now I feel like we're being set back. But I do think that so much changes, you know, are happening. But I think inherently, emotionally, I mean, because we are the one that physically, you know, carry these babies, deliver them, that whole natural, you know, woman maternal instinct, I think is hard to deny.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we will always bear the brunt of parenthood more than men, whether it's, I mean, I think physically and emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that we're always going to have a little bit of a struggle with balance, with guilt. When you try to do it all,
mm-hmm.
you sometimes feel there are moments where you feel like you're not doing any of it well.
Right. And like, I feel like every woman, especially mom, feels that.
For sure. And it's so hard to not compare. I think we all have that friend who's the perfect mom.
Oh my God. Especially on Instagram these days, you see, like, I see these like influencer moms who are like, they wake up and they look perfect. Everything is perfect from their hair to their clothes, and they make the perfect dinner, and then they have their kid like in all their perfect outfits, and they're going to the perfect school, and then they're also like running a business and doing all this stuff, and they're happy, and then they're like kissing their husband and life is great. And I'm like, where's your meltdown? I'm having meltdowns.
I wish we were showing more of the meltdowns, because I guarantee you they're having those meltdowns.
Yeah.
But and I think it's, you got to show that. I mean, I literally found my first partner in business kind of while having a meltdown, venting about it, because how I missed having another adult woman that I could really, I mean, we were on such, she was very conservative. Of course, I'm from, you know, the French part of the Canada, which is very open and socially liberal. And we would have the most interesting debates while we worked. We still to this day have tremendous respect for each other. But we had these adult, you know, debates for those 4 hours of on all subjects. I learned so much culturally about the U.S. just chatting with her. And I would get home. Well, I would go pick up my children and come home and then take them to the park and to soccer practice and all these activities, feeling rejuvenated and feeling like my brain had worked that day in so many ways.
Yes.
You know, because when you associate yourself with like-minded people, and I mean that by another woman who wants to go out there and feel like she's doing something for others and for herself,
mm-hmm.
because it could be volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
It could be whatever makes you happy, right?
Just finding that thing that makes you feel alive as yourself.
And I truly believe that that made me a better mom. I mm-hmm. think that if I fought my nature, how I'm wired, and just thought, I need to toughen up. They're all doing this. Mm-hmm. Why can't I do this? I'll do the... It just wasn't my path. I would have been miserable.
Yes.
Sylvia and I might be divorced by now, because I wouldn't have been my true self and would have ended up, you know, complaining all the time, becoming more and more unhappy.
Resentful.
Resentful mm-hmm. can lead to depression.
Yes.
You know, we all need to have our own identities.
Yes.
So it's truly, for me, it made me a better mom. My kids would sometimes make jokes, you know, why their lunches weren't nearly as nice looking, or, you know, sometimes lunch was $5 instead of the perfect little bento box that their friends had. But
they're fed and they're loved.
They're fed and they're loved. And I will say, I mean, after school, it was all about them.
Mm-hmm.
Take them to the museum, read with them, challenge them. But I see Chloe now, who's going to start law school in the fall.
Oh my gosh.
And I know.
Why am I crying? I'm like, it's just like crazy. It's like, you probably are so proud to see that you have raised this, especially woman. Obviously you raised a great young man too, but an independent woman who feels empowered to like pursue herself.
Well, I'll send you this little link, because, you know, she's on the soccer team at her university, Lehigh. And they did this whole little segment this month on basically women empowering change, feminism, like what can women do to advance, help advance other women? And it had to do, they had to basically speak to why I'm choosing this career and how I'm hoping to entice change. Mm. So she had to do a whole little segment and think about, you know, okay, I'm choosing to go study law. Why am I doing this? And how can I, and Chloe's always been very interested in women's right to begin with. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of her dream, is to help fight for women and advance women right in law, using the law. And it just, and, you know, she has now come around to saying things like, you know, that seeing a strong role model, someone who showed her that, you know, you can work. Obviously, I was very different from the rest of her friends' mothers, mm-hmm. who she would come home and be like, why can't dinner be this perfect? And why, you know, but
I don't even try to cook. I gave that up. I literally, like, I'm like, cooking is off my table. I'm not doing it.
Well, and who's to say that it's your job?
I know.
I say that all the time.
Right. Like, why is it just like the woman's role? Like, Michael exactly. is a great cook and he just sort of took that over. And I'm like, you're the cook. And exactly. that's it. And he loves it and it's great. Like, why does a woman have to do that?
It's a partnership, mm-hmm. right? You decided to create an entity together. Mm-hmm. And who's to say that you have to cook because you're the woman?
Right.
I mean, I totally refuse to. I personally love to cook. It's sort of another therapeutic for me. And it is. Mm-hmm. I think, and see, for Michael, I
that's
bet
how
it's
he feels.
The same thing.
Oh, he loves it. It's so creative for him. To me, it's just a chore.
So interestingly, my mother was the same way. So my dad was always the one to cook most because my mom felt the same way. To her, it was another chore.
Yeah.
And we made fun of what she cooked because she just did it like a role, you know.
She just did it to get you
fed. She just did it to get it done. Whereas my dad would create these great meals
yes.
or be, you know.
That's
and
exactly
he was
like me and Michael.
The creator in the couple. And so it's a partnership. It mm-hmm. should be. My parents very much were a team.
That's
and
awesome.
There's no set role. As
what
a matter
role model. What role models?
My father often was the one to clean most too, just for some weird reason. He found that kind of peaceful and, you know, and my mom loved gardening. She would much rather spend 3 hours digging dirt and doing mm-hmm. stuff outside. That's how she would relax. My dad actually enjoyed that also, but you know, they just did everything together. There yeah. was no set role. And I do think that that's a strength of French Canadian culture that I'm glad I have even in my new life here in the US. Because here too, like I was speaking of that community, and there's so many great things that, you know, that are inherent to this culture mm-hmm. that I have now, that we've integrated into our lives. And I think this, you know, it's such a gift. I sometimes I'm so torn with sort of having this double.
Right. How do you balance
identity
that?
Identity.
You've had such a huge life as a French Canadian, but you also have a huge life as an American. How do you?
I've really learned
that?
To try to cherish like the best of both. And because now I feel like I see more critically the other side, what Canada and Quebec in particular might not do so well. And when I'm there and we chat with family and talk about how they view the U.S., you know, well, I'll often feel obligated to defend the U.S. and be like, it's not like that at all. Those are preconceptions. This is how it is. And here are some strengths of, and I find myself doing the same thing here, defending some of, you know, people will be like, oh, Canada, you guys, you know, and it's so funny, but it's really made me kind of embrace that whole biculturalism of, you know, take the best of both. And with our kids who really grew up here, mm-hmm. mainly, I think, in Nashville. I mean, Julian was in first grade when we moved here. They are quite Southern. And Julian's very much a gentleman. He opens doors. They say, ma'am, sir, which is something that is so different than from how we grew up. It's, you know, I love that they have that. I love that they have the open mind of being a little more, I'm not sure how to say that, but because they've been exposed to other ways,
yeah,
they just have a very open mind about different culture.
They know that there's a lot of ways to live.
Yes.
You don't just have to be in one particular culture. Like, you can be a Southern, grow up Southern, but you can also appreciate and identify with other ways to live. It doesn't have to just be one way.
Yes. And it was interesting for me to watch them struggle with that a little bit in school. Like, who am I? How do I fit in with my parents are not the same as her parents? And, mm-hmm. you know, we eat differently. We, you know, I cook French a lot still, mm-hmm. but when we first got here, I mainly cooked what I knew.
Right.
And so, and my kids would be like, oh, mom, you know, so-and-so's coming over for dinner. Please don't cook anything weird.
Please make a hot dog and hamburgers and French fries. Yes. You're like, no, but this is so much better.
But they would be like, no, it's not. To this day, Chloe will ask me to make her grilled cheese with, like, she's like, please use, like, white bread and a yellow slice. Because she would ask for a grilled cheese while during a play date. And I would use a leftover baguette. And I would have some
gruyere.
And I'd throw a little brie. Like, I would mix, like, all these leftover cheeses. And they would be like, what is this? Or
it's heaven on earth, and I wish I could eat that.
It's a gourmet grilled cheese.
Yes.
But yeah, I definitely watched them sort of have to learn to juggle. But now I look at the result, and I feel like they have the best of both. You know, mm-hmm. they're not perfect. I'm not saying that, but they have a very interesting approach. And they really have the best of the South a little bit, which is so interesting.
What are some of your favorite traits that you that you got from being French Canadian?
Definitely, bold would be one. I think that French Canadian, period, are very strong-minded, opinionated. You know, it's the Latin side of the blood, like mm-hmm. French-Italian mix, sort of just being pretty much. Very much who you are, mm-hmm. very authentic,
mm.
and not embarrassed about it.
That's awesome.
Not scared to express your opinion and your views, share them with others. I've learned to be, that is something that I've learned here from the South, of being more gracious about it. And standing back and listening more. My opinion is not the only opinion that matters.
That's what you've learned from being here.
Yes.
Okay.
It is, because when you live in a place where everyone sort of essentially feels the same, it's so easy to start thinking that's how it should be.
Right.
But no, it's not how it should be. That's how it is here. Who knows how it should be, right? That's what we all have to work on.
Okay, so that's interesting. So being here, you've actually learned to like step back and listen a little more.
For sure. Wow. And also appreciate other opinions that are so different from mine sometimes, but just to learn from them and also grow from that, you know, learn mm-hmm. to see the other side. And that teaches you to sort of go over to the other side a little bit,
yeah,
in a way, because you're seeing all these people. We have so many friends who, you know,
respect.
That we respect and yeah. love. We love their families. We love their children and how they raise them and the great kids that they've mm-hmm. raised also. And so there's so much to learn from that, you That's know, amazing. To respect other people's opinion. I would definitely say that I was a little more, you know, I know on that subject. And it's, you know, when we go home, that is literally what happens. We cook for hours. We drink for hours.
It sounds kind of awesome.
And then we argue about everything for hours. But it's when I say we argue, we kind of feel we very much have the same opinion very often. Mm-hmm. It's almost more of a playing devil's advocate. Uh-huh. Like, we love to debate so much that we create debates by like with fake arguments to see what the other will say. It's like the sport of arguing is very French Canadian. And it's one of the reasons my daughter would probably tell you that.
She's going to be a lawyer.
Yes. It's so in her.
Wow.
It's like, if you say go this way, she will be like, but what about this little path? That looks interesting.
And you know, there's a good point to that. Why not?
Yeah. And yeah. that's definitely how I am too. Just, you know, just not the way that you say is not necessarily what I'm going to accept, you know?
Right.
And that has to do with design too.
I appreciate that, because you're not just going to take this standard answer. You want to know why. And then you want to know, why is there not another way? And
exactly.
Why can't we explore this other way?
Exactly. And then if the original way was truly the best way.
But at least you explored every other option to know that.
Yes. But that is a lot of what I've learned here with some friends who just are, it is just to respect the fact that it's okay to realize that you're wrong.
Yeah.
And to admit it.
Yeah.
And to have heard the argument or the other way and say, right. You know what? I've tried it, but you're right. This was better.
And there's something really beautiful about that, to say, like, we can actually have a friendly debate and we can totally, I can push this issue a little bit or like pursue a different option and then realize your option is right. And it doesn't have to be that I was like this terrible person who said something wrong. I just wanted to see what else is out there. And then to say, like you said, say, I'm sorry. Like, not even I'm sorry. Like, you're right.
You're right.
You're right.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
It's very healthy.
When I was 18 years old, I think I thought that having to say you're right or I'm wrong.
Yeah.
It was the most horrible thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know? So I still don't say it that often. But I think it's an improvement.
When did you know your business was exploding? Like, you went through all of this life change and all of these feelings and all these evolutions of yourself. When did you know, I have arrived as a designer and I am one of the top designers in my field and it is like I am here? When did you know that, and how did you get there?
So when we moved to Nashville from Dallas, it was another sort of big having to reinvent yourself moment, because Dallas is a very unique market. People out there are a lot more, they're extremely social. They mm-hmm. love to entertain. Bigger is better.
Mm-hmm.
And people dress and decorate differently than here. It just meant that I was losing that existing clientele. So when Sylvain, you know, came home one day to say, I have this incredible opportunity to move to Nashville, I was like, oh, here we go again.
I just got my footing in Dallas and now I have to start over.
Yeah. But honestly, interestingly enough, it kind of happened the same way. You know, we took the time to kind of settle the kids in, find the schools, and I pretty much designed the house to make it a home.
Mm-hmm.
We had to buy it in 2 days. When we moved here, the market was so hot. I had not even seen it.
Wow.
Sylvain had to
That's
literally.
Like right now, the market
yes,
is so hot.
He had to make an offer because there was another offer behind it. And it kept happening. So
yeah.
I finally said, I trust you.
Yep.
We'll make it work. Just
mm-hmm.
buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So he did. And we, so I concentrated on that probably about for 6 months. And then again, neighbors that I had met who brought meals the way that people here do in the South, which is so incredible, introduced themselves, brought a casserole. We were like, oh my gosh, what is this place? It's so incredible. I met these other ladies. They saw the house, asked me to help them. Well, this time I was allowed to work.
I
had a model that I knew sort of how to recreate.
Mm-hmm.
I had to adapt to the style of these homes. And, you know, people here are a little more casual. And
mm-hmm.
it's definitely more the true South.
Mm-hmm.
There's an aesthetic, like a classic Southern style here
mm-hmm.
that doesn't exist in Dallas. So learned that a little bit through my first projects. And then I quickly met one of my neighbor who, again, had just moved here, was an extremely creative person. Her kids were actually just a little older than mine, so she even had a little more freedom. And she literally said, I love what you're doing. I mean, I would love to work with you. And her name is Julia Dunn. She's still one of my dearest friends. And so she was my first, you know, partner, call her here. And we did faux finishes, we painted, you know, we picked paint colors for houses, we did small furniture. That's sort of how we got our foot in the door, and it evolved into so much more, started to work with builders.
Was it more word of mouth?
Always.
All word of mouth.
Always.
Because people eat with their eyes, they see it, and they're like, who did that?
Correct. And honestly, you know, communication, taking good care of your clients, you have to listen to them and you have to hold their hands when they panic. You can't just be like, trust me, I know what I'm doing, and then let them to, you know, like not sleep at night because
it's a lot of money to design and build and renovate or whatever you're doing to house.
It is. It's such a trusting relationship. Like you have to have, they put so much faith into you, and sometimes they hardly know you most of the time, as a matter of fact. Right now I'm doing entire houses remotely with clients who will meet me when they move into their beautiful new house that we will have built and furnished fully.
Wow.
I mean, that's a huge, huge trust into someone that you really do not know.
Right.
So I, that's, you know, about, I would say probably about almost 2 years, 10 years ago now, is really when we started to turn down business and having to choose our projects.
What a moment when you can turn down business.
Yes.
That is like such an amazing feeling to know that like you actually can just say no. I'm kind of choosy. I'm picking.
Yes. Because at first really I still have a hard time saying no. That might be my biggest problem in business. Because once I see, if I agree to see a project, I'm in trouble. Because I usually...
Because your mind explodes.
They're so nice. They need us so badly. Even though I'm already working 24/7. There is no more time. But, you know, just got to a place where, I mean, the kids were still relatively young. I didn't want to miss. I also, we were starting to get asked to travel to different cities to do houses in Florida. And I couldn't do that. My husband already traveled. I was the one to pick up the kids, take them to soccer, and that, you know, I was perfectly happy with what I was doing. So it was almost keeping the business on hold, like just doing what we were doing, taking the perfect amount of project to try to have a good, you know, working slash parent
life
family
balance.
Life. And when they started to drive is when, I mean, that was a life changer for my business, because I could then take so much more. And of course, I also grew hiring more people, help. But having employees is great. And it's sort of, we operate in a way that it's like my second family here now. You know, I work with a lot of my best friends, and I feel so fortunate about our relationship. But it's still more work for me, because I want to make sure that everything we do reflects my philosophy and who I am as an interior designer. And so when other people are doing more work, I still have my hand in that. So it just, I've learned quickly that adding more help does not mean that I'm working less.
Yeah, it's not necessarily taking more off your plate.
No, correct. So very important, I think, for women to, which goes back to something important that you said earlier, is just to be patient and sort of trust. And it made me sad to turn down a restaurant, you know, while my kids were in middle school.
But how great you could trust your instinct, though, to be like, you know what? It's not the time of my life for that. And I'm going to turn it down because I want to be present with my kids. But to like know that and to be able to have that guiding intuition, that's hard. You have to like know yourself.
Well, you just have to know that if those opportunities are there now, they will come around and they'll come around even bigger and better, you know?
Yeah. Cause you're not forcing it because you feel scared that you're going to lose it.
Correct. If you're good at what you do.
Yes. And Oh, that's a good piece of advice.
If you stay the course, it's all going to happen really at the right time and in an even better way. You know,
that is such a wise piece of advice because you have this carrot dangling in front of you and you're like, oh, that's such a big opportunity for me. I want to do this, but like, it doesn't feel right. It feels rushed. It feels stressful. It feels too much. But if I turn it down, I'll never get something like this again. So I have to say yes. But really, then you end up suffering at the job. You end up suffering being a mom. You end up suffering because you knew your gut was telling you, no, it's not the time.
Exactly.
It's trusting that process, which you are really good at. Like, you're really good at trusting the process. And it's so hard to not compare yourself and like see other women in the field or other people in the field doing this or doing that. And you're like, gosh, I should try to do that because I need to like catch up or have more or whatever. But you stayed the course, and then look at you now, you know?
Well, some of it, I'd love to say that it's great wisdom, but it really was just, you know, my husband traveled. He was gone most weeks before the pandemic. And, you know, I was the one home who had to stop at 4 o'clock and pick up the children and, you know, take them to soccer. And I didn't really have a choice, but I really did learn to be at peace with that.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I just kept thinking, I'm still so young. I am just getting started.
Yes.
So when, by the time they're in college, yes, I'll go do the houses in Florida and yes. I'll go do the houses in LA and I'll do a restaurant. I'll do 10 restaurants.
Yes.
And guess what I did this year? I did a house in Florida. I did a house in LA. That is exactly Stop. What I'm doing.
That's amazing. And you knew it would come in the right time.
Absolutely. And I'm wow. not about to slow down. I mean, you know, I love what I do. I wake up every morning with new ideas and thinking about who am I meeting today and what are we going to create? And so, you know, people ask me sometimes, well, don't you want to slow down? Like, and I feel like,
no,
like
I'm speeding up.
I am. Exactly. I am just getting started. I love it. I'm eating it up.
What do you want to tell a woman, a mom, or just a woman in general who feels like she has all this creativity, who feels like she has all this to offer the world, but she feels stuck. She doesn't feel like she can get going. She doesn't feel like she has a way to get into the career that she wants. She feels like it could never happen for her. What do you want to tell that woman?
Wow, that is a tough question.
It is.
Definitely don't be shy to, I think women view things like that as a weakness. And like talk to your pack, talk to your people, you know, because that's sort of, I may have never gone this path if I hadn't been talking to this friend. Her name is Pat Rothney, who lives in Ohio now. If we wouldn't have had that chat where she also opened up and we realized we're feeling the same way and decided to do this together.
And you started in your own home for no money.
Correct.
You just started, you found a way for it.
Correct. You want to bake cakes for events. You want to cater, offer a friend to do her shower or her, right? Like mm-hmm. It's at first, I completely did it for free,
mm-hmm.
but it really is just put yourself out there, mm-hmm. you know, talk to other people about
let them know what your talent is.
Let them know what your talent is, or even try to figure out that talent with them. You know, sometimes we just don't know. I've always envied people. Like, so my son have been saying that he would go into medical school for years.
He just always knew.
He always sort of knew. Uh-huh. And now he's in medical school and thank God he adores it. He loves it. He always knew that that was sort of his path. And I was never that way. I'm interested in so many things. I feel mm-hmm. like people ask me sometimes, you know, what would you do if you were to do this all over again? Well, now that I know what happens in my story, I'd do it all over again. But, you know, when I was 20, if I, you know, would choose a different major or something, I mean, I don't even know what to tell you. I would love to be a vet because I'm crazy about animals. I would love to be a chef because I love to cook. And I think, oh my gosh, when I look at women chef, they're such badasses.
Yes.
There's so many things that I feel like I could be interested in pursuing. It kind of happened a little bit by accident.
Right.
But it's because I tried mm-hmm. and I put myself out there. And
you fought for it.
I fought for it, correct. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, don't be scared to, we went and met a builder and basically said, we can do your model home so much better than whoever's doing them.
And you'd never done one before.
Your house is so well built, but you're not showing it well. We'll do it for you. We'll show you what we can do. You know?
You just put yourself out there immediately with never having really done it before.
Absolutely.
Just confidence.
Trust yourself.
Yes.
Be confident.
Yes, and take those risks and walk into it confidently. Maybe you don't have as much experience as someone, but you know you have what it takes and you know you have the determination and drive to do it.
Absolutely.
So just I love that. Put yourself in those situations. And I love that you said start with your people. Let them know what you love.
Yes.
And then try to find little opportunities to showcase that.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Exactly.
Gosh, Marie Jo, that's amazing. So I always wrap up with Leave Your Light. Obviously, this whole podcast has been super inspiring. What do you want people to know? What do you want people to know? Like when you if you're like speaking to a crowd of women, people, whatever, what do you want them to know about life?
Wow. That is
just a very broad question.
Yeah. Just a little easy one to end with. I mean, I think that when I look at my daughter's generation, which is probably not too far from your generation. But when I look at young women following us and how they seem to put so much value into balance and really not being scared of pursuing their passion, maybe over monetary things. Mm-hmm. I have so much respect for that. I'm far from believing that they will not be successful because they don't care as much about money. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of times I feel like they're more interested in the experiences, mm-hmm. and in what life will bring them and what they can do for the world. And again, it goes back to passion. Like, if go and do what you're truly passionate about, because if you do have that passion and you're willing to work hard at it, mm-hmm. and I don't mean working hard in the sense of not having a life and working 24/7, you're gonna be successful and you will have an impact on the people, the world around you. I find that so inspiring, because I do think that our generation was a little more driven by, you know, get into the rat race, you know,
so you can make money,
go and work in a corporation or a big company and work as much as you can in so many hours so that you can get a promotion as fast as you can and go up and up and up. And I think that a lot of children have watched their parents work so hard and are sort of thinking, that's not what I want in life.
I want to have soul in my career.
Yes. Yes. And, but then the parent in me wants to say, but I mean, you love going on ski trips and you love going to,
so you got
to
make that money too.
You're going to need a little money. But I think it's great to sort of let them, like, you know, when you're young and you're idealist, and it's great to see, just have faith in what that might lead to, because I think that they're not saying they don't want to work hard. Right. They're just saying that they're basing their decision on something different than maybe we did.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Working more for soul and not money, and the money will come, is correct. Really what they believe.
Correct.
Like, if they pursue your passion, pursue what's in your heart, the money will follow.
Correct.
Not leading for the money, not working for the money.
Correct. And I mean, I honestly, that's sort of how I started. Mm-hmm. And even nowadays, I think what the projects that I choose are thoroughly more motivated by how interesting the experience that mm-hmm. it might bring us, rather than solely a monetary decision. Because ultimately, we're not out there to just crank out that many, you know, I do this because I love what I do. Mm-hmm. I love that I have the opportunity to change people's life in a very small way,
but to give them a home,
yes, where they feel, as you said, say they come home and it feels safe and it's a haven,
yeah,
that where they can relax, and especially right now, you know, home has proven to be more important than ever.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter how small or big it is. Mm-hmm. So that to me, that is my biggest reward, is when a client, you know, walks in and it's done, and sometimes they cry, which is so great. Sometimes they jump up and down, but just like and they'll write us a thank you note that says, you know, it was just a house. It was just walls, and now it's a home, and we love it so much, and we're so happy here.
That's amazing.
And it just, yeah, that's ultimately really why we do this.
That's amazing. So. Marie Jo, you are incredible. This was such an amazing interview. Wasn't too scary, was it?
A little bit, but you made me very comfortable. You are so comfortable and great at this. And what a great idea. What a great, great initiative. I mean, that speaks exactly to what we just talked about.
Well,
I mean, the thought that you're trying to empower women through sharing our experiences.
I feel that way.
So great.
I want to showcase women who are doing amazing things, and to show other women that, like, it's not really easy for any woman, but you can still do it. Like, your journey, if someone might look at you on Instagram or in an article or something and think, God, how did she get all that? That's amazing. How did she get to this place? But really, if you hear your story, it's a journey. It's been a ride for you.
Oh,
it's been some highs and lows. And I think every woman especially needs to know that there isn't this one person who's just had it so easy. It's just, you have to get into that journey and, like, trust it, and it's gonna be good, it's gonna be bad, but don't feel upset if you're lost for a moment, because we all are lost.
We are, and we grow, it sounds so cliche, but we do grow from all of that.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are so many meltdowns, and there have been projects where people walk in and they go, ooh, this is not what I expected.
Yeah.
And then you just have to adjust and think, how can we make you happy? What can you do? You know, it's their mm-hmm. home. Mm-hmm. And so it's not always rosy. I certainly didn't mean to make it sound that way. But,
no, but
you yeah. never give up. Yeah. You adjust. You turn around and mm-hmm. you think, how can I fix that?
Yeah.
And that's even exciting. Challenges are exciting to me. And yeah. you just, yeah. No woman needs to back down or be scared of anything. We're all so strong. We just have to you know, find out what we are good at and what we, because yes. it's not always as easy for us to find that.
I agree. We all have something that we're so good at, and we all can, we just have to find it.
Exactly.
You just have to start with curiosity and then start pursuing it however you can and just let it evolve, just like you have with your story. And then who knows, maybe one day you're one of the best designers in Nashville, Tennessee, like you, Marie Jo, because you trusted your curiosity and your journey and you fought for it and you wrote it out. It's inspiring. It's so inspiring.
Thank you so much. This was such a fun chat, and I cannot wait for you to see your own bedroom
at
the end
of
this.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
I know. It'll be so fun.
Well, you're the best, and thank you so much for joining me. I'm just so honored to have you as a guest, as a person that I admire in my life, and you designing my room. It's really a privilege to know you and to have this conversation. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Bye.